August 4, 1994. Camp Shamrock, Tibnin, South Lebanon. Like a stream of red ellipses, machine gun tracer rounds arched lazily across the inky night sky. Every few moments, a vivid white flash from an exploding artillery shell revealed for a microsecond the distant ridgeline and the volcano-shaped silhouette of the outpost above Hadatha village, manned by Israeli-allied Lebanese militiamen and under attack by Hezbollah. This was my first view of the fighting in South Lebanon, and I was watching it with a cup of coffee alongside several Irish United Nations peacekeepers. The location of the Irish battalion's headquarters granted it a clear southward view across a shallow stony valley to the ridge that marked the edge of Israel's occupation zone. To me, the battle unfolding a mile and a half away was a confusing kaleidoscope of colored lights and loud bangs. To the Irish officers, however, this was purely routine, an event they had witnessed many times. They sipped coffee, nonchalantly discussed where Hezbollah's mortars were probably located, and remarked on the improving accuracy of their bombardments. This minor attack, recorded by the UN mission known as UNIFIL, in one of many soon-forgotten shoot reps, came during a period in which Hezbollah was gradually shedding its Lebanese Civil War image as a shadowy band of kidnappers and suicide bombers, and emerging in the public eye as a resourceful guerrilla army recording a growing number of battlefield successes against the Israeli occupiers of southern Lebanon. Hezbollah had surfaced 12 years earlier, in the wake of Israel's 1982 invasion of Lebanon. Few would have guessed at the time that this ragtag group of Shia militants, who drew guidance from Iran's Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini and inspiration from the martyrdom of the sect's founders 14 centuries earlier, would survive the civil war, let alone become the dominant political and military force in Lebanon 3 decades later. Indeed, it is extraordinary to contemplate that Lebanon, a country half the size of Connecticut with no natural resources, fractious demographics, and an opaque sectarian political system, could give rise to an organization that has grown into the most powerful non-state military group in the world. In late 1996, when I began covering the conflict in South Lebanon for the Daily Star, Lebanon's English-language newspaper, Hezbollah's post-Civil War military evolution was fully underway. Back then, however, its weapons and tactics were comparatively rudimentary and appropriate for its guerrilla-style methods. It was a conflict largely overlooked by the rest of the world, which had lost interest in Lebanon once the last Western hostages were released in the early 1990s, but it was a fascinating conflict to observe nonetheless. I soon learned to navigate the potholed lanes winding through the steep stony hills of the frontline district, and gradually built up a network of contacts on the ground. I studied military manuals, absorbing data on the weapons systems used by both sides, and scrounged ever more detailed maps of southern Lebanon, marking with a red pen the front line and the locations of outposts manned by Israeli troops and their South Lebanon Army militia allies. There was an element of the routine about Hezbollah's deadly roadside bomb attacks and the daily mortar barrages of Israeli and SLA outposts. Sometimes I would sit on the flat roof of the restored Crusader fortress in Tibnin and watch the puffs of smoke from mortar shells blossoming against distant SLA compounds and hear the metallic crack of exploding Israeli artillery rounds. It was easy to be lulled into a false sense of security by these daily tit-for-tat exchanges. But the conflict also had the ability to quickly spiral out of control. And then South Lebanon became a very dangerous place indeed.